Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Kane is staying. It's Hariverdurchi City, as Daniel Levy says Kane can't. We wave goodbye to that enthralling affair and talk Chelsea-Liverpool, double Deutsch at Anfield, Man City-Arsenal. Harry would love that. Pep's next step, statues at the Emirates, a cardboard cutout in East London, the Carabao Cup, a flip reverse, and much, much more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Thursday the 26th of August. Hello to you, listener. I'm here with Duncan Alexander. All right, Duncan?
Hello, James.
Adrian Clark is here too. Lovely to see you, Adrian.
And you guys.
And it's a big welcome back for Lindsay Hooper from The Offside Rule and soon Sky Sports WSL coverage. Lindsay.
Hello. In fact, right now, because that's where I've come from this morning, is doing the Chelsea Women's Media Day. So it has
all
begun.
Right. What happened?
I was speaking to Magdalena Eriksson, the captain. She was talking about the Olympics, being in the same squad as Jessie Fleming, who got the gold and Magdalena got silver. And about being that scalp, I was just intrigued, actually, talking to a lot of the players at Chelsea. Now they are the ones that people want to beat, and what that has as an added extra for them, knowing that for a team like Brighton potentially or Aston Villa to beat Chelsea, that could actually make their season. And that they're very aware, but they said they don't want to be too arrogant about it, but they feel like they've been that for a while. So it's going to be an interesting season ahead. Sky Sports on board, and I can't wait to get started.
When's your first game?
Third of September. So there'll be a Friday night match between Manchester United and Reading, and then a big one on the Sunday because it will be Arsenal Chelsea.
Right. Woof. And now, today is Thursday, the 26th of August. Happy Harry Kane is staying day, everyone. Remain beating leave finally in the saga of the want-away Spurs star and his prospective move to Man City. He'll be staying at Tottenham, though, after City effectively failed to come back with a better offer and Daniel Levy effectively won, I think. Adrian, how's it going to be for Harry kind of wandering back into the Spurs dressing room after this?
I think Harry Kane's got a little bit of making up to do with the supporters. I thought it was a little bit shameless to almost credit the supporters for the decision to stay, because let's face it, if Manchester City had come up with the money, he would have been at Ofsky. So he said that with a straight face online, so fair play to him. No, I think that Tottenham fans can no longer sing "He's One of Our Own" with the same gusto. I would feel a little bit embarrassed to sing that if I was a Tottenham fan in the short term. It was just handled badly. It was an object lesson, really, in how not to force a transfer. You've got to do your due diligence if you go public on wanting to leave. And I think that him and his brother, who's his advisor, they needed to know. They needed cast iron guarantees from City that they would be able to stump up the fee that Daniel Levy wanted before going out there and making everything public. And they didn't do that. And they're made to look a little bit silly. It was such a half-hearted attempt at rebellion as well when he came back from holiday. It was just handled so badly.
Indeed. But a hat-trick this weekend against the Hornets and it'll be forgotten, no?
Well, it could happen, couldn't it? No, good performances and he will be forgiven and Spurs fans will sing that song. But I just don't think it'll ever feel the same because they know that they know his true wish was to move on from the club. But look, I love the fact that you have these one club men that become absolute legends at their home. But he put it out there so publicly that he wanted to move on, that I think it has cast a shadow on his reputation. He's got to put in a more than one hat trick, I think, to win Spurs fans back completely.
All right. The move broken down, or why the move broke down, is detailed quite nicely in a piece today in The Athletic, essentially saying that Man City, the offer they made, Daniel Levy was convinced that he could get more for Kane this time next year, or possibly even convince Kane to stay. And City had never come back since late July to Tottenham with a better offer, which kind of left Harry hanging out to dry.
Yeah, City have sort of got away with it a little bit in terms of the blame in some senses. Because, as you say, 75 million plus an extra 25 is clearly not enough for Kane. But you do wonder, you know, Guardiola's come out this week and said he'll do this season and next season and that's it. So in that context, having Harry Kane for 2 years, for him, is ideal. But for City, with all that outlay, with a player that has had injury issues and, you know, will be 29 next summer, possibly isn't as good. So you can almost imagine maybe the decision makers at the club were less keen on Kane than Pep was, and that's how it's ended up. So, but as agent said, it's just one of those sort of messy sagas, really. But honestly, for Kane, I think he's got more chance of, you know, if he does want to catch Alan Shearer and become the all-time top scorer, I think if he stayed at Spurs, I think he'd probably get more goals than he would at City. So that's
no
one thing.
Wants to see mob rule, do they? Football mob rule. We don't want it that players demand and can dictate when they leave a club. And so the signing of that contract for Harry Kane was key. But what we don't know is what the conversations were around that contract. And I think what's become apparent from the whole of this saga is that you only go by what's in a contract. You cannot take anything away from that. So I can imagine there could have been pressure from a Spurs point of view when signing that new deal that, you know, sign this. It ensures that we get more money for you. You want to do Spurs a favour, but this gentleman's agreement of, which we believe was, we're told was there, that you can go if the offer is right. But of course, what we've learned is that probably, even if that conversation happened, it's not worth its weight. And you have to think about the advice that he was given at the time.
Well, indeed. I must admit, Lindsay, I'm not sure if I agree with you about your abhorrence of the idea that individuals should be able to choose when they leave an organisation or not, but perhaps that's a personal thing. It does leave, of course, Pep Guardiola
Contracts work for both parties, don't they?
Well, that's true. But yeah, I mean, I remember the old days of pre-Bosman when, you know, clubs owned you.
Yeah, I mean, for people who, younger listeners who may not remember or know that, in those days before Bosman, your contract could expire at a club and the club could still decide whether to sell you or not, or what sort of transfer fee. It was, you know, at the time everyone was like, well, this Bosman was going to destroy football. But I think in employment law basis, it probably made a bit of sense.
And if a club wants to get rid of you, James,
yes,
midway through your contract and you don't want to go, yeah, they will make life hell for you, let me tell you. And they will shame you until you take a reduced salary payoff to we've seen it hundreds of times.
Anything so you want to tell us about
Arsenal with you, Adrian?
small fry.
Fingers now, like Clark is not leaving on my watch. Sorry, I meant Anelka, not Clark.
I did cancel a contract. I did walk away with zero money once just to get out.
We definitely saw that at Sunderland, didn't we recently? Who was it? It was Jack Rodwell, wasn't it? At Sunderland. And I mean, even the documentary made a bit of a villain of him for that. So yeah, you are right from that player's point of view. But I mean, what is a contract worth if it isn't worth the paper it's written on?
Well, I've done it with a mobile phone contract and I can tell you it feels good just to walk away.
Right. That was the kind of buzz Harry Kane was anticipating this summer, but it's not to be. As he put in his tweet this summer, so a lot of people wondering whether we can enjoy all of this saga again in the build-up to January, which starts effectively from next Tuesday. It does, just in the meantime, leave Pep in a pickle. Can he make do with a squad worth just £952 million with a long season ahead? Or is a move for Ronaldo on? I mean, I feel it's unlikely, but what do you guys think?
I think Ronaldo would like it, but I think, you know, the wages he would demand, and I'm sure he would actually demand them, would be high. But you know, as a man who likes round numbers, Ronaldo's on 84 Premier League goals. I think he could get 16 goals for City in a season, and then we can. It's the last thing he needs to do, really, in his career. So,
well, it's an exciting story that no doubt we'll be hearing more about between now and Tuesday and the end of the transfer window. For now, though, let's crack on with this weekend's fixtures. Match day three of the season kicks off Saturday lunchtime at the Etihad as Man City take on Arsenal. Then at 3 o'clock, Villa Brentford, that's Dean Smith against his old side and former assistant, Brighton Everton, Saints making the long trip up to Newcastle, West Ham, who mullered Leicester on Monday, they'll be hosting Palace, while Leicester themselves look to bounce back away at Norwich. Saturday tea time has some Liverpool-Chelsea with your scones. Sunday, it's Burnley Leeds and Spurs Watford at 2. The Spurs game, once again, not televised. And then Wolves hosting Man United at 4:30 to round things off. Crikey. Looking forward to our chat, Lindsay, about Wolves and Man United. But
you're setting me up again. Season of people saying you only talk about Wolves.
But that's so patently not true. They're just wrong. Yeah.
They're just shepherds.
Let's begin at Anfield with Liverpool Chelsea.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Umpers and early markers in the title race at the ready at Anfield on Saturday for the all Teutonic Klopp Tuchel title tussle. Who's looking forward to this?
Me, mega so. I can't wait for it. I mean, this is the earliest indication I think we get as to whether Chelsea are going to really go for the title this season. I think Liverpool, they're both teams that have kept clean sheets. There's them and Brentford because of their goalless draw in the last match as well. So there's only three teams managed to keep two clean sheets. Then you look at the attacking power, you add in Lukaku and how seamlessly he slot in for that first match. And we have got a humdinger on our hands, I think.
Oh, absolutely. No, this is going to be a great game. I was at Emirates for the 2-0 destruction from Chelsea on Arsenal. It was a really, really difficult game for Arsenal. And seeing them in the flesh, seeing how well-oiled they are, seeing the clever movements of Mount and Havertz, basically dragging Arsenal's players completely out of position and also creating this sort of funnel effect where they created corridors of space for Chelsea's midfield to pass balls into Romelu Lukaku. It was so clever. And the defending as well, what defending they had to do, they did it really professionally. I was mega impressed by Chelsea. And you look at their XG across the first couple of games and they've barely given a chance away. And the same did happen at Anfield in the game in March. I think Liverpool's XG was 0.28. So they are capable of playing in these huge games and shutting off the opposition. So look, for me, I think it's a really even game. I suspect it might be quite cautious because of the ramifications of it. No one will want to lose. But Chelsea, for me, are the slightly stronger team, especially in midfield, where I think that Jorginho, Kovacic, Conte, whichever ones play, are more than capable of dominating Liverpool.
If you want to know how much football's come on in the last couple of decades, I don't think a big game like this 20 years ago, you'd say it's going to be won or lost from fullbacks or wingbacks. But I think, you look at, Trent's been coming inside and almost playing as an auxiliary inside right. Tsimikas has been great, but you imagine that they'll bring Robertson back in because, Lukaku does drift to the right as well. And I think Robertson will be reliable there. Reece James got the second best expected assists in the Premier League so far this season. As the agent said, he was just finding so much space at Arsenal. I don't think he'll have as much space at Anfield, but Chelsea on average are the widest team in the Premier League this season, not physically, but spatially. And then Marcus Alonso's got the most chances created from carries in the Premier League this season. So it really is really interesting to see how different philosophies, different ways of setting up, but possibly the two most productive defences in the Premier League. And I think it's going to be a really, really fascinating match.
Having spoken to Antonio Rudiger this week, actually, Duncan, and you think about these defensive setups, I thought it was really interesting that his approach to it was, we want to be in the opposition's half as much as possible. So part of the reason he puts down to having so many clean sheets isn't defending, it's making sure that you're in the opposition's half as much as possible. That's something that Tuchel's trying to instill. And I thought, well, that's exactly what Klopp is trying to do as well, isn't it? Which makes it such an interesting contrast for these two teams going up against each other, because they both want to play in the opposition's half.
Yeah, and I think that's been the big strength of Van Dijk coming back, is that he can play passes so well to either flank, and that's suddenly made Liverpool's fullbacks really effective again. And Chelsea are going to press really hard, and Van Dijk is the player you imagine can beat that press with his passing. So, yeah.
Adrian, you were mentioning Chelsea potentially dominating Liverpool's midfield at Anfield. Do you think that Liverpool midfield is going to feature Harvey Elliott again? And if so, how big a test will that be for him?
I don't think it will. I think even though he's had a good start to the season, I think Fabinho is available for this game, and I would expect him to walk straight back into the team. But it's great to see Harvey Elliott being given a chance. I really liked what he did at Blackburn Rovers last season on loan. He was second only to Emi Buendia for chances created per 90 minutes. He scored 7 goals, 11 assists. He's a really exciting sort of midfielder / wide man. He can operate in both roles. So, and it's good to see Klopp giving him a chance. On Van Dijk, by the way, I completely agree with those long diagonals. They make such a difference. I think his partnership with Joel Matip is really underrated. I think in Klopp's head, it might be his number one partnership. And the stats kind of back it up. They lost their first game together against Swansea way back when, just after Van Dijk signed. And they haven't lost since in 33 games, 25 wins, 7 draws. So that is a partnership that Klopp trusts. And I think that's his numero uno.
Is that not just true of Van Dijk on his own? I mean, could it not be me and Van Dijk and you'd still have that stat?
Well, I don't know. Liverpool have lost games, haven't they?
They have,
possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly.
I mean, he's got that extraordinary stat of not losing at Anfield since
48
forever.
Games now.
Yeah,
it's an incredible record. I just think they're a great partnership. You know, obviously both really tall, huge threats from set pieces, and Van Dijk's the full package, isn't he?
They're going to have a huge test this Saturday evening, though, against Lukaku, who, Adrian, you will have seen look particularly well suited to this Chelsea team and all the other goal threats they've got around him.
The big difference in Romelu Lukaku now to the player we saw at Manchester United is that Antonio Conte has worked tirelessly with him to become a centre-forward that's comfortable receiving the ball with his back to goal. Before, he just wanted to run down the side channels. Now, and we saw this, goodness me, an unbelievable amount of times in the game at Emirates Stadium where he received a pass just with his back to goal and just bounced off Pablo Mari and either the link play or caused a problem. He was frightening to see in the flesh. 8 shots, 7 inside the box, so many touches inside the final third. And they created this avenue for him. And I think that will be part of their game plan moving forward, Chelsea. So, yeah, we all see him as the missing link. And that game highlighted what he's going to bring to the table.
All right. Who's going to win then, Saturday afternoon? Lindsay?
Because it's at Anfield, I don't think there will be a winner. I think it will be a draw.
All right. Duncan?
I've gone 1-1.
Yeah, draw seems sensible, but this fixture does have a lot of away wins in it. Liverpool win at Stamford Bridge quite a lot. Chelsea won quite a few at Anfield. I wouldn't be surprised to see Chelsea win, actually, which it wouldn't be a disaster for Liverpool, but I think it really would boost Chelsea's self-belief for what I think will be a pretty strong title challenge.
1-0 Chelsea or one apiece. That's my prediction.
Okay. Huge game. We haven't even touched on the whole Klopp v Tuchel angle so far, but let me just sum that up. They're both German. They both managed at Mainz and Dortmund, and they'll be facing each other. So there's that. Well, let's talk about a top v bottom clash that's coming up. Actually, it's the first fixture of the weekend. It is Man City against Arsenal, and we'll get on to that next.
Ah, the summer was fun, wasn't it? No allegiances, everyone getting behind England, 3 Lions being sung everywhere. But now the Premier League is back, get Grealish off the bench, he can stay on it at City. Pickford might have been a safe pair of hands. Now he's just a pair. And enough of Jules Rimet dreaming. Now it's our turn to dream. So kiss goodbye to that vomit-inducing unity and welcome back proper football. Let's celebrate flair on the grass, not a flare up the... Paddy Power. 18+, begambleaware.org.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
With Liverpool and Chelsea facing off, a big chance for the defending champions Man City to roar back to the top of the pile. They're at home to Arsenal. Man City, no Harry Kane for them, if you're just joining us. But the good news for Pep Guardiola is that the Gunners generally provide a good opportunity to get over any disappointments you may have just had. They've lost all of their last eight meetings with Man City, have the Gunners, in the league at least, and failing to score in seven of those eight matches. Crikey. Adrian, Arsenal on two straight defeats. They haven't lost three in a row at the start of the season for 67 years, but they did show signs of life midweek away at West Brom in the League Cup. Aubameyang with a hat-trick.
They did. It was an under-23 team for West Bromwich Albion, so you probably shouldn't take too much stock from it. But it was a great confidence booster for Aubameyang, for Lacazette, who came on and looked sharp. Odegaard was good. Saka, Pepe. All these guys will come out of that match feeling better about themselves. But look, that match and the Manchester City test are going to be virtually different sports. It's not going to be the same. So for me, this is all about how Arsenal will approach it. Mikel Arteta has achieved success, albeit maybe not against Manchester City, but he has achieved success in big games against tough opponents by being very cautious, playing a back three, back five and playing on the break. But this season, it seems he set his stall out to play with a back four and to really press and be assertive and bold and in his words, be brave. That's great if it works. And if you do that press brilliantly, you can suffocate teams and score goals like Italy did at the Euros. If it doesn't work, the very best teams will pick you off. And Chelsea did that with unbelievable ease last weekend. And if Arsenal adopt the same tactics this time, then I fear that City will as well. So fascinating to see how Mikel Arteta approaches it. Because if he has the courage of his convictions to go the same way again, I worry for what the result could be.
Mm. Adrian, as our in-house Arsenal man, can you confirm that Arsenal do a goal of the month video in-house? Because if so, I think that League Cup match has prevented some problems.
Yes. No, it wasn't. It was looking a little bit bare. The cupboard was empty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, there were some good goals in that game. So, look, goal of the month is saved. Will they score in this game? Look, they're going to have to play an awful lot better, aren't they? But for me, it's about that defensive platform. If they have one, they've clearly got the forwards that can score a goal. But without that solid defensive framework, and if the shape gets pulled around, then look, that plays into City's hands, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, it feels like this sort of game is very suited to Jack Grealish, actually. This is the sort of match where I think, you know, this is the sort of match he'd been brought in for, and he has had good games against Arsenal in the past, and if Arsenal are being exceptionally tight, he is, you know, the sort of man that can break those lines. And he's carried the ball further than anyone else in the Premier League so far this season, 739 metres, which is about as far as Peter Elliott used to get in an 800-metre race for Athletics fans. So, yeah, I think £100 million could get you some action against Arsenal this weekend.
The player they were willing to spend money on. Mikel Arteta under pressure, of course, as Arsenal boss, facing his former side here and his former mentor in Pep Guardiola. And Pep Guardiola himself, on Wednesday, dropping the kind of interesting bit of news that he's actually leaving Man City at the end of 2023, the end of next season, effectively, when his contract expires. He says he wants to have a bit of a break and he'd like to take charge of a national team. He'd like to train a South American side, playing in a Copa America. I want to have that experience, maybe a European side too. That's what Pep says, which seems fair enough. The thing is, though, when managers give a departure date, we've seen it with Sir Alex Ferguson at Man United, with Sven, perhaps, that's a Lazio example, but you see it time and time again. It does tend to have a pretty immediate effect on the level of commitment and performance from their players. And I'm not sure why that should be, but it's a bit of a constant. Are you anticipating that maybe coming into play in Man City season this time around?
It can happen. We've seen it before. I think players like to know where they stand. But in reality, does anyone really look beyond the next 2 years in terms of where their future lies? I think that Manchester City have obviously got a fierce determination to win the Champions League. And I think that will be the two-year focus. They'll go all out for it this year and next year and try and do it for Pep. I don't think any Manchester City player will presume that they're there for life. You know, because it's a cutthroat industry, and you can only really work from one season to the next. We know that City are ambitious, and they could upgrade your position at any moment. So I think the motivation will be there, and Pep will certainly be super motivated to go out with a bang, won't he?
I have my own theory on why he's said that now, and it's because the statue maker is in rich business. We've got Vincent Kompany coming out, David Silva, and what he's doing is saying, whilst you're there, you might as well get working on this one for 2023, yeah?
Leave a space.
Yes.
Plinth me up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, Vincent Kompany and David Silva, who will be unveiled at the Etihad, or at least in statue form, this weekend ahead, indeed, of the game with Arsenal. Has anyone seen the representations of them? Are they, what end
no,
of the scale
I can't
are we
wait.
At?
I can't right. wait. I love seeing a statue unveil. All the ones from where they absolutely took the mickey with David Beckham, and that was all a bit of a stitch-up, through to the actual real unveilings of, like, the Ronaldo statue that looked nothing like him. It's something, I take a lot of pleasure in the likeness factor.
Right.
I will extensively be looking at it as soon as the unveil is revealed.
What was the taking the mickey with the David Beckham statue thing, Lindsay?
It was part of a TV show, wasn't it, when he was out in Los Angeles, and they said that they'd done a statue and it looked absolutely nothing like him. They break it in front of him, they knock it over, it smashes, and it's all a big setup, a TV camera crew are there. And in true David Beckham style, he handles it brilliantly.
Right.
Kind of Hollywood Beadle.
Nice, nice. All right, lovely stuff. Very, very shortly, we'll be hearing about the team who are top of the table currently. That's the Hammers. First, though, this.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. With Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Think of it as your protection against Arsenal doing an Arsenal. And in the words of Jennifer Aniston, here comes the science bit. Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max rebet is £10. Enhanced match odds are not included. Online exclusives only. T's and C's apply. And please be gambleaware.org.
Back to the Premier League then. And the team that's currently top of the table for the first time in 15 years are West Ham. A reminder that when David Moyes was reappointed to West Ham in December 2019... a voice on this pod declared, "Oh my God, having to appoint David Moyes to save your season once is careless. Having to do it twice is negligent." Well, fair to say the mood very different these days, especially after Monday night's barnstorming win under the lights over Leicester, which is now being hailed as the greatest game ever played, brackets, at the London Stadium. Was it that special? Well, one man who was there is The Athletic's Rashane Thomas, who joins us now. Rashane.
Good morning. And by the way, whoever said that about David Moyes deserves a yellow card, that's an absolute bookable offence, Matt. That is a bookable offence.
We all say that now, but what were you saying back in December 2019?
I was optimistic. I thought, you know what, right now in terms of who's available, can't see anyone better than David Moyes, to be fair. He was free. Not like the club had to get another manager, another big name manager, to try and fix things. They needed someone who experienced, someone who knew the squad. The right man was David Moyes in his first game in charge. One of the biggest home wins, 4-0 win over Bournemouth. And obviously, ever since then, things have been amazing for the club. So looking back now, it's definitely the right decision to bring him back.
Why do you think they have been, or he has been, so much more effective in the second spell there than in the first iteration?
It's more so building a team that supporters can relate to. So you've got the likes of Declan Rice doing amazing, Mikel Antonio's likable personality, recruiting well, and Thomas Solchak and Vladimir Safal. Supporters can relate to this team, whereas before you had expensive signings, the likes of Felipe Anderson, Sebastian Allaire, Simon Nasri on the free, who wasn't really pulling their weight in West Ham shirts. So now supporters can relate to them, whether it's Declan Rice's story in terms of not making it at Chelsea and doing great things at West Ham, or Mikel Antonio coming through humble beginnings at Tottenham Mitcham and doing great things at West Ham. The average man in the street's going to have struggles in life. The average woman in the street's going to have struggles in life. And we're seeing that in terms of this team that's been put together. They've all had different hurdles along the way, and supporters can relate to that. So I feel like that's definitely one thing that Moyes has been able to build. And the team is likeable. It's a very likeable team. We saw it on Monday in Mikel Antonio's post-match interview, and just talking about breaking the record, part of the Kanye's record, that is, and his goal celebrations. It's such a likeable team, whereas before, as I mentioned, you had big egos, players who felt like they were better than everyone else, the likes of Dimitri Payet, to a lesser extent, Marko Arnautović, whereas now you've got Vladimir Safal, who's a fan favourite, who's clapping everyone as the last player to leave on Monday, or Thomas Solchak, who's like, he loves potato salad. It's just such a likeable team.
Mm. Yeah, it's good that you got rid of the big egos and now have players who lift up cardboard cutouts of themselves and then give themselves a kiss. But no, it was a charming moment from a charming player. Although I see that he tweeted that he actually got the name of the film wrong. He'd said in the interview with Sky that he was referencing the 2001 MTV-funded teen dance drama Save the Last Dance. But it was, of course, Roshan.
Oh, Dirty Dancing, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well, apparently he said, score the goal, make history, nail the celebration, got the film name wrong in the interview. That was Mikel Antonio's tweet afterwards. So Monday night, I mean, you were playing a side with 10 men, but they're calling it the best performance by West Ham, certainly at the London Stadium ever. What did you think?
I'll agree with that. It was one of the best home games I've been to at London Stadium. It was that good. The game finished around roughly 10-ish. I left the ground at 11:30. It was a Stratford Station, and fans are still singing the Antonio chant. I'm forever blowing bubbles. We're going to win the league. And this is two games into the season, so everyone was just on a high. Throughout that match, the atmosphere was brilliant. It really was. Because prior to that, the away trip at Newcastle, I thought the atmosphere was really good. But it was just a different level in terms of the match against Leicester on Monday. Fans just singing. At half-time, we have this quiz called Hammer It Out. And like, it's a new feature they're doing, just questions on, like, the amount of games Mark Noble's played or the amount of goals Antonio scored for West Ham. And fans are going, oh, I didn't get it right. Oh, yeah, I got it correct. Like, that never happened before. That never happened. Usually fans are going and get their, like, £10 hot dog. So the fact that they're staying behind and, you know, interacting with stuff like that is just amazing. And I honestly feel, for the first time on Monday, it felt like home. The London Stadium felt like home, and it felt like a stadium that supporters could be like, you know what? I need to spread the word. I need to spread the word and tell people to come here because the atmosphere is so good. So long may it continue, because for the first time in a long while, it felt like Upton Park.
Roshan, as well, as someone who watched the Europa League campaign with Wolves as well, I mean, the one thing to say is that you don't get leggy, do you, if you're winning? If you carry on as you are, there's never, ever any mention of the schedule or people getting tired and needing breaks and needing rests. I think you're fine as long as you carry on the trajectory you're on. It's when you start losing, that's when European football comes into play.
For sure. And obviously, as you touched on, winning breeds confidence and players are more determined to stay in the team. Whereas previously, especially on the Pellegrini, when the team weren't winning, it's still the same team pretty much. So to an extent, players knew they could not put in a 10 out of 10 and they'll be in the same start 11. Whereas now, if Bowe's not on it, and that's someone else will come in, whether it's Yarmolenko or maybe a player from the youth team. Players know, especially not West Ham, they have to do it.
Yarmolenko is going to be pleased that he's been mentioned in the same breath as the youth team.
Yeah, for sure. So they have to give it all, no matter what. I wrote a piece recently about the pre-season in Penny Hill Park. We have this new drill, right? The shooting drill. So I'm always passing to the player and we all have to score. But whoever doesn't score, they have to collect all the balls. And like some of the players will kick the balls into the trees, into the woods, all that sort of stuff. So again, it just shows that determination and fighting spirit in the team.
Excellent. The draw for the Europa League is coming up on Friday, Rashane. Then we have the aforementioned Crystal Palace on the weekend at the London Stadium. Palace, the only team in the top four divisions of English football yet to score a goal in any competition this season. Are you looking forward to this game?
For sure, it should be. Well, another home game. The likes of Fornals, I'm sure, want to continue his good form. Saïd Benrahma, he's been like a new signing. He's going to continue his form as well. It should be a really good one. And you just want to keep that winning spirit, keep winning games. I think Moyes' message to the players should be, let's win as many matches as we can before the Europa League starts, because as a touchdown, it's going to be very difficult trying to balance the whole Thursday Sunday schedule. So win as many games as you can. And yeah, as you touched on, winning breeds confidence. The youth team are also doing well. They're learning lots from the likes of Declan Rice, Mark Noble and others. So it should be another good home game. I'm sure when fans are on their way to the station, they'll be singing Antonio, Declan Rice and all the other chants. So it really is a positive time right now to be a West Ham fan. It really is. So long may it continue.
Rashane Thomas of The Athletic on why nobody puts West Ham in the corner.
I would definitely buy all the albums by a band called Yarmolenko and the Youth Team. 100%.
By the way, that celebration from Antonio, it could only work with fans in the stadium. I was there and I saw him go over to the bench before the game started and pointed down at what clearly was the cardboard cutout, but I couldn't see it from my seat. But I thought, he's got something up his sleeve here, like, if this happens. Never in my wildest dreams did I expect the routine that was before me and caught by the cameras. But I think because the fans were there, it actually made it pretty epic.
Yeah, it would have been bizarre in an empty stadium. But just to clarify that, that wasn't a cardboard cutout that was standing around and he noticed it and thought, oh, let's have a laugh. He'd brought it along specifically for that moment when he became West Ham's record Premier League goalscorer.
Gave instructions to the bench to whip it out as quick as possible when that happens. And it wasn't going well. In the first half, he was trying too hard. And I think everyone could see that. And I think David Moyes had a word in his ear at half time to say, just play your game. You're really just going to town on trying to get this celebration in.
Also, Moyes post-game, the look he gave when asked about Antonio's celebration, not a fan of,
distaste,
of choreography.
The key question is, did he commission a cardboard cutout for himself or did he steal it? Has he nicked it from somewhere?
You know, the club's
shop.
It
could be in the store.
Commissioned, I reckon.
You know, okay. There's obviously a gap somewhere now that doesn't have a cardboard cutout of Antonio.
He's commissioned. Yeah. It's quite easy to do. You must have done it, Adrian, no? Am I the only one who's commissioned a life-size cardboard cutout for the home use? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
We'll move on.
Do you
on.
Kiss yours?
Anyway, so what? Do I kiss mine?
Do you kiss yours?
Do I kiss mine? Listener, you're asking us to move on. And I think you're right. Leicester. Lindsay, a quick question, though, about Monday night, since you were there. Leicester going down to 10 men with the red card for Ayoze Perez. Was that the key thing in the game, or were West Ham just way better? And what conclusions would you draw about that from a Leicester point of view?
It changed the game, but West Ham were on top before that happened. West Ham were the better side. I have no doubts they would have gone on to win that game, not perhaps by the margin they did, but they were better. The explanations afterwards, I spoke to Tielemans, and I know that Brendan Rodgers said something similar, was that they felt Ayoze Perez was fouled in the lead-up and he didn't go to ground. Now, it's interesting to bring this back to Adrian as from a player's point of view, that he tried to stay on his feet and by doing that took a wider berth to get his balance back, and that's when he did the stamp. Now, slowed down, it looks awful. My gut instinct at the time in real play was it was a yellow. And then I think with 60,000 West Ham fans causing the commotion and the noise that they had that we haven't heard for so long at London Stadium, as soon as it was referred to the monitor, I had no hesitation he was going to go. And I think there wasn't any question mark when it was slowed down from any of the Leicester team that it looked bad, but they felt that something was missed in the build-up.
Well, Leicester will be without him for this weekend's trip to Carrow Road. They'll be taking on Norwich Saturday at 3. Norwich, by the way, two seasons ago when they were up in the Premier League, took 4 points off Brendan Rodgers' Leicester. They've had a tough start fixture-wise, but they have been busy on the they are busy in the transfer market. They've signed Man United left-back Brandon Williams on loan, and they are in talks, apparently, with Real Betis over the signing of our old friend, Portuguese international midfielder, William Carvalho. Welcome back, William Carvalho, to Transfer Talk.
Who are they going to go for next? Wesley Snyder.
The two guys that played in midweek, Josh Sargent, the American international, and Christos Zolis, the Greek international, they were brilliant by all accounts. So be interesting to see if they start. And look, let's face it, if Norwich are at it inside the final third, this Leicester team are not defending well at the moment. Outshot 19-5 by West Ham. Outshot at home to Wolves 17-9. They look shaky, and I think it's a good time to play Leicester.
Norwich had a 6-0 win Tuesday in the Carabao Cup over Bournemouth. In fact, there was a bit of a feature of the Carabao Cup second round. Premier League teams absolutely whomping sides from the Football League. The record was played 9, won 9, drew none, lost none, scored 40 goals, conceded 2. Jordan Lever, indeed, writing about the League Cup, says, would now be a good time to consider scrapping the Carabao Cup. Or would that harm lower league clubs too much? For context, 4 teams this week conceded more goals than San Marino did against England at Wembley in March.
Yeah, but as Adrian touched upon earlier, this is the strange thing now, the Carabao Cup. Like, a lot of the Premier League teams are playing strong teams because they need to give some game time and also maybe struggling. Whereas the EFL teams often like, well, we're not going to win the Carabao Cup. Let's put out the under-23s or the reserves or the B team. So that, I think that's the reason why there were so many huge discrepancies in the scores this week. But I think I like the League Cup. I think it gets round to the semi-finals. You have those two legs. It's like a nice little mid-winter treat. So yeah, I know that some of the early rounds can drag a little bit, but I think it's good.
Wickham in the third round, Duncan. Week commencing September the 20th. Who have you drawn?
Manchester City away, who have won the League Cup every year since 1927. So, but I mean, we wonder why Pep's happy to reveal a leave date. Well, Wickham beat City home and away in League One in 1998-99, and that has you know haunted City for a long time. So I think he's now got a chance to avenge that. And move on to manage Guatemala.
I wish I'd jumped in when you said that has zero bearing, is what I was going to say.
No, Lindsay. Players will be feeling the weight of that history.
Yeah.
Lindsay, your last game, I say your, but Wolves' last game, was a 4-0 win at Forest as part of that, you know, excellent Premier League record against sides from other divisions. 4-0 at Forest on Tuesday. And coming up this Sunday, you've got Man United. So it's a timely moment to get a win and some goals because 0-2 in the league and no goals scored as yet. There must have been some worried faces, I imagine, at Molineux.
I don't think they are worried faces. I think that has been the only thing that has been missing is, and of course it's an important part of the game. We need the goals. But that seal has now been broken, courtesy of Nottingham Forest. Thank you very much. And
Bottom of the championship, Nottingham Forest.
Well, you know, however it comes, as long as you can spark the fact that this team are able to show that they can get it in the back of the net. They've done that. And I think that doesn't bode well for Manchester United because Wolves have played brilliantly. Anyone who hasn't paid too much attention, they've dominated in the games against Leicester and Spurs. What we don't want is a habit to develop that you're dominating games but coming off with 0 points. Potentially now off the back of the League Cup, because we've had players like Trincao, Morgan Gibbs-White, Dendonka scoring. It wasn't just the same people either. I honestly hope that it all clicks. It's going to click against someone, James. That would be my observation so far, is someone will have 3 or 4 put past them when it does click.
Right. The underlying stats are impressive. You've had the second most shots in the Premier League in the two games so far. Only Liverpool have created more chances. Wolves have made the most tackles in the Premier League this season as they adjust to life under Bruno Lage. What's the fans' view now on Adama Traore Lindsay, who seemed a little bit like a living football cheat code when he first broke through. But since then, how close are we to unlocking that potential?
He is the difference maker, but unfortunately, it doesn't always result in him making the right final decision. So what he can do is he can turn over play very well. He's a great outlet ball. The pace, I mean, honestly, I don't think there is anyone, Kyle Walker included, that can keep up with him, because when he turns it on, it is a different level. And up close, when you're in the stadium watching that, you see that at full steam, and it's incredible. But there has to be an end product to it. I think if he was to go to somewhere like Spurs, which has been rumoured, and of course linking up with Nuno probably would make sense at some point. What Wolves have to ensure, and what Bruno Lage has to ensure, is that he gets that creative outlet player, because without him there would be a big, big gap. And with Neto as well being put back further, so he won't be returning until around February because there's been a setback in his injury and recovery, I don't think there are any other players really that are going to provide for the likes of Jimenez. So it's dangerous, I think, for him to go at the moment. But he can be a frustrating player equally.
I wasn't sure whether the Spurs move was prospectively with money they'd be receiving for Harry Kane, but potentially that's still a live story as we head into the final days of the transfer window. Man United in this fixture looking to set a new record for the longest unbeaten away run in English top flight history. This would be 28 matches without defeat on the road, which would beat Arsenal's old record.
It would be a new record, but would anyone really care? It doesn't feel like an important record somehow. Yeah, no. It is impressive, but yeah, it's just one of those things that sort of ticks by. So,
right. Why does nobody care? Is it because they feel Man United's ambition should be loftier, or is it the fact that there weren't fans in stadiums for a great portion of that period?
Yeah, I think that definitely skews it. And also, you know, as we know, a lot of those have been comeback points or wins. And it doesn't really... With the Arsenal one, it formed part of that invincible story, and it was a team that was at the peak of their powers. And I don't think this United team are that yet. But, yeah, you know, take records where you can. I mean, you know, there's a lot of clubs, fans of a lot of clubs that would love to go, you know, 8 games unbeaten away from home, let alone 27 or 28. So.
Fair enough. All right, in a second, we'll check on the other things happening this weekend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Big game at the Amex, everyone. Brighton against Everton. That's 3 o'clock Saturday. Adrian, what has happened to Brighton? 3 wins out of 3. Scoring goals. Duncan, give us that stat about shots and goal conversion.
Well, they've leapt from about 8% conversion rate last season, which was the worst in the Premier League, up to 14, which is pretty good. And at one point during the Watford game, they'd scored with 4 of their last 7 shots in the Premier League, which for Brighton is extraordinary.
Adrian, what's happened to Brighton?
Yeah, very strong. A strong start. I think their set piece deliveries and executions have been outstanding. They've looked magnificent. From those that they look like they might score every time they have a corner or a wide free kick. Shane Duffy, by the way, is right up there among the highest shot takers in the Premier League so far this season. He's had 7. And for a centre-half to have 7 attempts on goal in 2 games, is, I think that tells its own story. they've got issues at fullback. I mean, it's not the perfect team. They haven't really got a fullback at the moment. They've got Solly March at left back. They've got Adam Webster at right back. Bissouma, I think, has been just ridiculous.
Are they going to hold on to him?
Well, why isn't anybody signed, Yves Bissouma? I don't understand why a number of teams haven't bid for him. He's a wonderful all-round midfielder. The assist the other day where he went and closed down the player and nicked the ball was outstanding. But he does a lot more than that. He's quality in possession. He breaks into the box. He's got great energy. I think he would be a wonderful signing for a number of teams that have loftier ambitions than Brighton. So, that is a mystery. But we might find out more in the coming days, of course.
My favourite bargain buy of the whole transfer window is in this fixture, but on the Everton team, Damari Gray. I mean, I still have to... I thought they made a mistake when they put 1.5 million. I thought they meant 15 million and someone had missed out a dot.
Yeah, it's true, actually. 1.5 million is like a heritage transfer. For it. It's like, what, they just signed Tony Cotty or something? But, yeah, I know what you mean. But Everton are fitting into what I call the jam Nutella theory, which is where you've had jam for ages, suddenly Nutella tastes really nice and vice versa. So under Ancelotti, Everton were comfortable in possession but weren't really creating many chances. They've leapt up this season. Only Burnley have had fewer kind of passing sequences than Everton. But Everton are having like 7 shots on target a game, up from like about 4 last season. So Benitez has made them a lot more direct. You know, players like Damari Gray, Andros Townsend have made them just, you know, a bit more of a kind of effective, direct team. And I think that's okay because it's different from last season when it was not much fun.
Indeed. Jam yesterday in the time-honoured phrase. They're top of the fouls charts now under Rafa Benitez, unlike their previous iteration under cuddly Carlo Ancelotti, where they were much more of a friendly, amiable... James Rodriguez stroking it around. It's all changed now. He was on Twitch last weekend saying he didn't know who his team were playing.
I saw that. I mean, it was all in. It wasn't in English, was it? So I did have a little nosy at it, and he's just talking at the camera, isn't he? I'm quite new to Twitch. Yeah, it's a bit random. The writing's on the wall for him. But in going back to your point about the aggression, football's an aggressive game, and you have to impose yourself on the other team, and if you're not the most skillful team in the Premier League, you have to do everything else better than everybody else, don't you? You have to do the tackles, you have to do the closing down, you have to be really efficient on those transitions. So I think Rafa is going about his work really well. On Damari Gray, great start, but he's been around for a while, right? He's never, ever had more than 5 direct goal involvements in a season. That's a goal and assist. So he's never had more than 5. So don't get your hopes up is probably the message.
Is he like a kind of Adama Traore figure?
In his defence, he's never been a regular like Adama Traore. I think he is hardworking. He is direct. He can torment fullbacks. But yeah, it's just the end product, isn't it? It's that final finish. It's that final cross. He frustrates. And look... If he can jump out of that rut this season and you know, score and create bundles of goals, good luck to him. But recent history suggests that probably won't happen.
Brighton, can they continue their perfect start? The Toffees haven't won in 4 previous trips to the Amex. They haven't won at any Brighton venue since April 1983, when Let's Dance by David Bowie was number 1. Just to give that a little bit of historical perspective. Different times. All right. Hey, Rafa Benitez's old side Newcastle will be hosting Southampton. They've had a rotten start, the Magpies. 2 defeats out of 2. Got knocked out of the League Cup on penalties against Burnley on Wednesday. Saint-Maximin and Almiron both missing in the shootout as well. Southampton, by contrast, 8-0 winners. 8-0 against Newport.
Not 9, is it?
Yeah, they almost found out what it feels like. There's no way that wasn't going through their heads. Finally payback, but they came up short.
Well, this fixture actually should be the only fixture in the Premier League this season where a man who has played in a 9-0 manages against a team that have lost 2 9-0s. So there you go, 9-0 fans, you're sorted.
Steve Bruce doesn't help himself though, does he, sometimes? I mean, I often have a bit of sympathy for his situation.
Not at the breakfast buffet, perhaps, Lindsay, but otherwise. Yeah.
At a harvester.
This week, the way that he went on record to say how much he'd like to win a League Cup and he was going to field a really strong team. And then you get an obscene amount of fans that turn up, even in the circumstances of being disgruntled, for a League Cup midweek game. You have to side with the fans on this occasion because they've been sold a promise. And, you know, you're not forced to say these things. You can say, you know, the absolute priority is just staying in the Premier League. And unfortunately, that means that our squad depth, take away some Maximan from the starting 11, Wilson, Willock, which all were missing for the start of this game. And we're not left with that much, so we can't promise that we're going to deliver despite last season's efforts. I feel for them because they all went, they turned out, they're expecting to see more from their team in these cup competitions, and they're out in round two.
Well, indeed. Saints, coming back to this weekend's game, have lost all of their last four visits to St James's Park. Must be a bit miserable because it's a long way back home after that. Longest trip in Premier League, actually. Elsewhere this weekend, at Villa Park, former Brentford boss Dean Smith up against his former assistant Thomas Frank as Aston Villa take on the Bees. Brentford are unbeaten and yet to concede a goal in the Premier League. Daniel Storey shyly positing in his The Eye Monday column that Brentford might be this season's Leeds. What do the metrics say about that? Well, Leeds last year led the way in the Premier League for tackles made. Brentford currently first. Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds also last season were the most effective team at pressuring opponents. Led the way in, I'm quoting Daniel here, successful pressures. Number of times they won the ball back within 5 seconds of applying pressure. And Leeds are currently on top in that category at the moment as well. What do you think? Is it ridiculously small sample size? Or do you get that vibe about Brentford?
No, I think Daniel knows his onions and he knows his West London, West Yorkshire comparisons. And yeah, I think it's fair enough. I think it's an interesting game, this, because obviously there are quite a lot of links, as you mentioned, between the two clubs. It occurred to me this week that if Ollie Watkins comes back, obviously against his former club, but I think that partnership, if they do play him and Ings, is both really promising and it could be a really good hybrid name, because you could call them Watkins, and that could be their, like, you know, like, you know, forget having the BBC or the
MS. It's not as catchy as you think.
As I said,
Ingskin.
We could call them Watkins. No, Watkins. That I'm trademarking that. So yeah, it's happening.
Okay,
I like it.
Lovely.
I personally, James, I don't think Brentford are as good as Leeds were. Right. I genuinely don't. I don't mean that with any disrespect. I think that they've had a good solid start to the season. Tactically, they'll be astute because Thomas Frank is a smart guy. But yeah, I think the aggression side of it is going to be where they've focused it so far. They're looking to you know, upset teams and disturb them. I just think against top quality opposition, that might be limiting for them. And I think that this will be a close game, tight game, but I would back Villa to maybe edge it, especially if Watkins line up front together.
Hey, that's catchy, Adrian. Is that a new buzz phrase?
I like it. Yeah, I just made it up. Nice. Do you like it? What they do, they're going much more direct. In the Championship, they play great football. I think in the Premier League, they're going to get it up to Tony and Embremo and ask them to wreak havoc. And they're capable, but I think that they'll be bottom half.
In the words of Junior Soprano, hit Tony.
Don't spoiler. Oh, and yeah, no, that's from season one. Well, I'm on season three, so be very careful.
I'd agree with Adrian, actually. I feel that in the amount of marketing and sort of brand chats I've been in recently, then we can call Brentford the disruptors of the Premier League.
Nice. And not this season's Leeds. Last season's Leeds, and still this season's Leeds, effectively, I think they would argue, are going to be away at Burnley. That's 2 o'clock on Sunday. That's the game that the TV supremos have chosen to put on air in place of Spurs and their clash with Watford, which I feel...
Hashtag quotes.
You know, with all that. Yeah. Anyway, Burnley leads. Leeds winning this fixture 4-0 last season at Turf Moor. Duncan?
Well, will we hear Turf Moor is a tough place to go at any point this weekend? I hope not, because no. They've lost their last five there. And as you said, Leeds won there handsomely last year. It's Burnley's worst run of form at home since the picture of Dorian Gray came out. And you do wonder if behind the scenes there's more problems at Burnley than seems.
Well, perhaps in their attic there's a really, really successful at home Burnley. That would be the kind of parallel. Yeah. Anyway, so let's snub that fixture for the game that's taking place at the same time but not receiving any airtime, which is Spurs-Watford. Kane's staying, everybody. Do Watford have a good record with Spurs, Adrian?
I don't know.
They don't.
The honest answer.
They don't. They've won only one of their last 18 meetings with Tottenham in all competitions. They haven't won away at Spurs in the league since Paul Hardcastle's 19 was number one. Do you know when that was? Do you remember
19,
that?
19, yeah.
Yeah, can you name the year
that, remember that
19 was number one?
I think that was 85.
It was 85, yeah, May 85.
The average age of a West Brom lineup in the Carabao Cup is 19.
Didn't really know what was going on. Wasn't really sure what was going on.
Watford, I think, are going to be incredibly reliant on Ismail Assar. Everything that they do seems to come via him. So if he can be shackled, I think that Watford can be tamed. That they got promoted, basically, because they were unbelievably compact at home. They barely gave a goal away. Clean sheets for fun. But in the Premier League, I just don't believe that they're going to... that their personnel is good enough to keep clean sheets for fun. And that means that they're going to need to score multiple goals to win games. And I think it's going to be really difficult for them. They did it against Villa, of course. Fair play. That was a tremendous start. But in games like this, I just don't fancy them. I think this might be a routine win for Spurs.
All right. We'll see, Adrian. Will the Hornets spoil the Harry Kane Spurs reunion party? That'll be coming up Sunday at 2 o'clock, although no, you can't watch it on TV. But we will be reporting on it in Sunday night's Totally Football Show, which will be available for you as ever on Monday morning. That's the weekend. Lindsay, you've got to leave us now because you're off to do the offside rule. Is that right?
I am, yes. Thank you for that. I've got back-to-back pods today.
Woof. And when's that going to be out?
It will be out later today.
Great. All right. Well, looking forward to that. The rest of us very shortly will be wrapping up this edition of the Totally Show with Arsenal having a bit of a miserable time of late and facing Man City next. We wanted to finish off with some positive thoughts for Gunner supporters, so we had to make some stuff up. So we're doing a special flip reverse, and that's coming up in a second or two. First of all, though, let's get some odds from Paddy Power with producer Charlie.
Welcome, listener. I am indeed joined by Carl Monaghan from Paddy Power. Another Premier League weekend is upon us. How exciting, and how exciting it was on Monday. West Ham did Leicester. Can they do a Leicester? Carl, is this the perfect time to be lumping on David Moyes' side to be champions?
Keep your hair on, Charlie. Listen, I agree that there was a fair bit to be impressed from the Hammers on Monday night. Absolutely. They look a slight upgrade on last year as a collective. Hats off to David Moyes, and huge for them, Charlie, if they can hold on to Declan Rice for another season as well. West Ham are 75-1 to do a Leicester and lift the title, Charlie, to answer your question. But I think there could be more value in backing them to get into the top four around 15-2 or even a top six finish at 11-4. Next up for West Ham is Crystal Palace. Palace are yet to win so far this season under Patrick Vieira, so it'll be the in-form Hammers that will be in Manizanaka this weekend, Charlie. The Hammers are odds-on to win the encounter at 8-15. The draw is 14-5 and Palace are 5-1. Now, we know Mikel Antonio is high off his own supply at the moment with 3 in his last 2, and he jumps off the page for first goal score at 16-5.
Also boasting 2 wins out of 2, Brighton, Spurs, Liverpool and Chelsea. Those last 2 ring a bell. And they meet on Saturday. Liverpool v Chelsea, Klopp v Tuchel. Your thoughts, please, Carl.
Well, Charlie, Liverpool are slight favourites at 6-4 after a decent-looking start, but it's mainly for 2 reasons. Why? Well, the fans are back first off in full voice at Anfield, and big Virgil is back at the back. The game pits Klopp and Tuchel against each other, both modern German coaches in high demand with very similar CVs. Saturday's game also sees the battle between Lukaku and Van Dijk, a real heavyweight clash that is sure to whet the appetite. Lukaku put in a bulldozing display at Arsenal last Sunday and got up and running with the goal. He's 4-1, Charlie, for the first goal in that game, and that will be hugely popular with punters this weekend. But if you're feeling brave, Charlie, you can back Chelsea at 9-5. Tuchel's men look the real deal so far and will fancy their chances of winning that midfield battle. It's also not a distant memory beating the Merseysiders at Anfield back in March for them. So this has all the makings of a cracker. And remember, Charlie and listeners, Burnley fielding a team last weekend with exact numbers 1 through to 11. That might have been very satisfying. Old school is cool. But so is getting your money back if one leg of your bet builder lets you down.
Listener, you can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Blazing Squad are flow of history disrespecting pop buddies back with their anthem to chronal meddling, Flip Reverse It. And today, listener, we are going to flip reverse all the way back to the 6th of April 2004. Arsenal were facing Chelsea in the Champions League quarterfinals. 87 minutes in, it's 1-1 after goals from Jose Antonio Reyes and Frank Lampard. But then Wayne Bridges' late goal stuns Arsenal and sends Chelsea into the Champions League semi-final.
Wayne Bridge, Ida Goodjohnsen, it's Bridge! It's in! It's Chelsea's night!
But what would have happened if Bridge hadn't scored? Duncan Alexander picks up the story.
This is one of the key moments of modern football history. I think this is where the everything we now know about football just revolves around this moment. Because if, you know, if Arsenal go on, the Invincibles win, the Champions League to go alongside their Premier League, I think, you know, much changes. And I think having cranked up the flip reverse machine, that it changes a little bit like this. Okay, so Arsenal beat Chelsea. Chelsea immediately dismiss Claudio Ranieri because they're fuming. They, for some reason, they place him with Arrigo Sacchi, which is nice because that also describes their general attitude to managerial employment. So then Arsenal face Monaco in the semi-finals. Now, in real life, obviously, Chelsea kind of messed it up in the second leg with some strange personnel choices. Wenger's not going to do that. He knows his strongest team. He also knows the quickest way through the car park to the stadium, having been their manager, so that saves a bit of energy, which it all helps at this level. So that leads on to the Champions League final 2004. It's Arsenal against Porto, Wenger against Mourinho. Arsenal just unplayable. All of Mourinho's tricks aren't working. In fact, he gets so angry, Mourinho, as Arsenal go 3-0, that Wenger just does his sort of classic Wenger smirk, and Mourinho just loses the plot. He calls Wenger a specialist in provocation. He fronts up to him. He's pulled off by the fourth official. It's a disgrace. What happens that summer is really important, because Mourinho in real life obviously then went to Chelsea, but his reputation right now is in tatters. People are like, he lost the plot in this fictional Champions League final. So he gets a phone call from his old boss, Bobby Robson. He says, can you come up to Newcastle? I need a bit of translation and a bit of coaching. Mourinho's like, all right, this is a good opportunity just to go off grid for a bit and kind of rebuild. So he does that. But as happens in real life, Newcastle start really badly and the board sack Bobby Robson. But instead of appointing Graham Souness, which, you know, they go, well, let's just get Mourinho. I know he's, you know, the summer and all that, but let's get Mourinho in. So Mourinho assumes control. He's not known as the special one. He's called Toon Mourinho because he's in Newcastle. He doesn't win the league in 2004-05 because he's not a magician, but he doesn't sign Michael Owen in summer 05, but he goes on to win the Premier League with Newcastle in 05-06. All looks to be going perfectly. Mourinho, Newcastle, you know, big Champions League bid in 06-07. But then what happens? The most famous event in North East history happens in December 2006. It's the final episode of Biker Grove, where they broke the fourth wall and all the characters realised they were fictional and that everything is scripted and TV show, and they were literally frozen. Mourinho is caught up in that same process, a complete loss of free will. and a realisation that everything in football is scripted and everything is preordained by a higher force and all your personality traits are written by someone else. And he also finds out that in 10 years' time, Ranieri is going to win the Premier League with Leicester, and it breaks him. And it also really messes up that season's edition of Premiership years. So a bit existential, but that is probably what could have happened.
Yeah, it's entirely convincing. Adrian, within that, and it did escalate quickly, within that, there are some really interesting ramifications of that Wainbridge goal. I don't know if Ranieri gets fired if he doesn't blow it in the second leg of the semi-final against Monaco. But would you go along with the notion that Arsenal that season looked like the likeliest winners of the Champions League?
Absolutely, I would. Yeah, that Arsenal team should have won the Champions League, shouldn't it? And if they'd have won the Champions League, it gets that monkey off their back and it elevates them even further into a true European powerhouse. And they clearly would have gone on to dominate and to sign, you know, many, many world-class players. And Wenger would have gone down in history as the greatest manager English football's ever seen instead of Alex Ferguson, because Arsenal would have gone on and won numerous back-to-back titles, clearly.
And what do you think would have become of this Portuguese manager who at the time, 2004, wasn't known as the special one?
Well, we know.
Wasn't known as pretty much anything for a lot of people in people in the UK. Do you go along with this? It's a fascinating prospect, him rejoining Sir Bobby Robson at Newcastle.
I think he quits football. He's disillusioned. And he becomes an incredible TV pundit. And he becomes the face of Sky Television. And he blocks the pathway to Gary Neville. There is no Gary Neville on Sky. Jose Mourinho is the figurehead. He is the main man because he's great TV. But he loses his love for management. That's maybe what would have happened. I don't know.
All right. Well, tell you what, the lesson I draw from this is tinker with Wainbridge goals from 2004 at your peril, because there is absolutely no end to the Gabriel Garcia Marquez-esque ramifications of your thoughtless actions. All right, Duncan, just one final note, by the way. That Biker Grove thing, that actually happened.
Yeah, a series which, you know, was about teenagers and, you know, usual issues that they faced, decided to end on the most existential fourth wall smashing thing with dinosaurs and spaceships. So, I mean, you know, go out in style, I guess, but
right,
an odd bit of TV.
Yeah, okay. Go back and check that out. That brings us to the end of today's show. I'm going to address you directly, listener, smashing the fourth wall as UFOs fly around my head. Many thanks to Lindsay, who was with us before, and producer Charlie, and to Duncan and to Adrian, and you, listener. I'm reaching out to you. We'll be back on Monday. Do hope you'll be joining us then, and that you have a lovely weekend in the meantime. Cheerio!
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.